Hello, it is May 8th, 2014. This is episode 414 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Today's death, George Pappard, who died May 8th, 1994. A Marine corporal who studied civil engineering at Purdue University, Pappard studied method acting under the great Lee Strasberg, and was considered by many to be among the best actors Strasberg ever trained, along with Marlon Brando, Robert De Niro, James Dean, and Paul Newman. His breakthrough role was as Paul in Breakfast at Tiffany's, but after that, his famously caustic nature and rampant alcoholism cost him many roles, and he spent most of the 70s playing dumb action roles in B-movies. He attempted to go into television and was actually cast as Blake Carrington in the show Dynasty, but he fought constantly with producers and was eventually replaced by John Forsythe. 2 years later, he grabbed his last big role when he got the part of Colonel John Hannibal Smith on the A-Team. He, of course, being Pappard, constantly feuded with Mr. T. Because of Mr. T's popularity, he would refuse to talk to Mr. T other than through messages passed through intermediaries. He was diagnosed with lung cancer in 1992 and died in 1994 of pneumonia in Los Angeles. He was 65 years old. Here in Athens, though, is really Thursday. I'm Will Leach, and thank you for spending part of your day with me. I can ignore it no longer. I can handle it no more. We must talk about the NFL draft. I have no idea how today's guest does it. He is a terrific, I think it's fair to say, maybe my favorite favorite NFL writer, anyway. And he is our own Mike Tanier at Sports on Earth. And I have no idea how he keeps himself sane covering the NFL draft. All right, Mike, my first question for you. I pay a little attention to the NFL draft. You pay a lot attention to the NFL draft. And I find myself absolutely exhausted by the NFL draft, and I've only barely been paying attention. How are you hanging in?
I've started to have some weird compulsive behaviors, Will. I'm not myself. Like, I've been compulsively watching film. I was watching film of Jeremiah Atanshu before you came in, and it's too late for me to do anything with this. But the short answer to your question is I'm wiped out. This additional 2 weeks was very unnecessary from those of us on the media standpoint. People I talked to in the scouting areas, it was completely unnecessary as well. Even at its best, like you said, like the ramp up, it's a little too much. It's too excessive. There's too much of it. Throw 2 weeks onto the pile and 2 weeks of beautiful spring days when there's other things to do. And it's just reached the point of complete saturation.
Yeah. And it seems like, and you know this, of course, a lot better than me, but it seems like it's even affecting the way we talk about players, just because you got to fill the time and all. Like, you give someone an extra 2 weeks of staring at somebody's navel, we're going to find something wrong with everybody.
That's right. And to fill you in, you know, I started doing the draft pretty heavily, like back about 2001. And it was a big deal then, but you were very much preaching to a choir. You didn't have NFL Network back then. You didn't have Twitter back then. Yeah, ESPN would do some draft shows, but it wasn't quite that insane. And one of the great things about preaching to a choir is that you could talk about third-round picks, fourth-round picks, because people were genuinely fascinated. You had this very core group of folks who were into it, and it's like, yeah, let's talk a little bit about Jeremiah Atanshu, and let's talk a little bit about, you know, Zach Mettenberger and these guys. And now that it's funneled up, and now that it's a cash cow for a couple of TV stations and things, now you're down to, we're going to talk about these 10 guys, we're going to keep talking about these 10 guys for two additional weeks. And it's very difficult. You're right. There's navel gazing that sets in. There's arguments about whether we should be arguing about the arguments that we have. That's kind of what's going on Twitter. I'm very consciously avoiding some of my friends on Twitter because it's like this weird turf battle. But how do you know? How do you think? You know, if you bring up Teddy Bridgewater on Twitter, you pretty much have to duck and hide because there's this whole thing. Well, you know, media guys love him, but scouts don't love him. And why is that? This is not a philosophical, epistemological argument that we're having. We're just trying to figure out who these guys are, can they play in the NFL, and where they fit. But it gets so far beyond that that it becomes, like I said, I've become a little bit delusional and strange. I have to get into Radio City later, and I have to get this draft going because I'm going crazy.
Of the 3 days, which is your favorite? Are you going to be there for all 3 days or just the first one or the second one? Do you know?
I usually stay for the 2 days. I usually come home for the third one. There's not a lot to get done there at the site for the third day. Whereas I'm at home, I've got all my resources in front of me, and I can load up film of that fifth-round pick rather than just saying, well, good pick. But I actually enjoy day two more than day one. It goes a little quicker. And this year in particular, there's a lot of exciting players going on day two. I think a lot of the quarterbacks that we've been jumping up and down about are actually going to go in day two. I think most of the running backs that we care about are going in day two. So it's a little more, you know, there's more picks, there's more intrigue, and there's less of the pomp and circumstance, which, especially when you're there, gets very tiresome.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I went to the NFL, the NBA draft last year, and that was like, you know, I found that sort of fun, but also completely exhausting. And that is like not even a slice of what the NFL draft is like. I can't imagine. Do you? It's fun, like at this point, you know, you have your sources and you talk to people all the time. Like it does feel like, you know, one of the reasons I like your stuff and I like, you know, Dan and Russ is the other guys that that do stuff for SOE and along with some other people, of course, is that I really don't feel like you're trying to sell me something. I feel like almost every single person that I see on the NFL draft, I feel like Deadspin had that great story about that one scout in the suburban Chicago, a scout or whatever, analyst or whatever he is. But like, it feels like almost everyone I talk that talking to me about the NFL draft, and maybe this is just the case in the NFL in general anymore. I just feel like it's all just marketing, and not even for the NFL, just marketing for themselves in a lot of
Yes.
ways.
Everything's an ad, man. I saw that on Twitter. Everything's an ad. You think this is content? It's an ad. And if you start thinking like that, your soul evaporates and you become some sort of, you know, weird economic unit instead of a human being. But that's it. You know, it's Mike Tanger branded or it's Russ Landy branded. And me and Russ and Dan, we try to avoid that. And a lot of the guys I know who are great at it try to avoid it. But you can see it when you reach a level of television personality, you're almost obligated to do it. You feel sorry for these guys, but every force in their life is pushing them to that. That's what their editors want. That's how their paycheck gets better. So you wind up doing that kind of thing. When it comes to draft coverage, I mean, I did it for years, and you know, I sort of trained at the feet of these guys who write in this vague, super jargon, stereo instructions type language. And what I realized, and when I was working for the Times, I realized, you know, you don't know 93% of these people at all. I mean, not personally, you don't really know much about even their college background. You don't even know when their big game was, when they had their 80-yard run. And you put up a draft guide, and it's writing to you like you're a professor of philosophy, and you want to hear about his calf muscles and things like that. So I know Russ does, I know I try to do it, and it's like, okay, Blake Bortles. Everyone has an opinion on Blake Bortles. Do you know who he had a four-touchdown game against last year? You don't. Do you know who he did in the bowl game? You don't. So I try to talk about that stuff a little bit because it's more pertinent, and you as a fan can say, oh, so that's who this guy is. Not, oh, his throwing platform is 10 degrees off what you want it to be. But, you know, here's a guy who was tearing up games against Temple and Akron and people like that, and we started to take notice, and that's kind of who this guy is. It's a better way of doing business, and what I find shocking is that other people around the internet, very few of them do that. We're still in that, you know, wide base, thick butt, bubble butt, you know, throwing platform, arm talent, all that jargon spinning, and where does it get us?
Well, it gets a you and I have a naturally high motor. I think that's clear. But yeah, you're right. Like it's not like it's funny, you know. And we'll get into the picks a little bit. But you know, I have family that lives in Buffalo, and I can't say I saw a ton of NFL reporters at University of Buffalo
Thank
Stadium
you.
to
Thank
watch
you.
Khalil Mack this year. And it is kind of a weird thing because, like, I mean, I don't know because you know, well, look at you and Dan and Russ you did a pseudo mock draft and so on, and the two of them have Mack as the first overall pick to Houston, and again, you know, it's funny because I know that when you know as little about the draft as I do, there's a temptation just to be like, seriously, it's Clowney. That guy's amazing. And you went with Clowney. Is that do you think people are just overthinking themselves or what is it?
Oh, there's a lot of forces there. First of all, you should be suspicious when you say how many of these guys were covering a Buffalo game, because the answer is zero, except maybe one, because Russ Landy might well have been covering
Right.
that Buffalo game, or certainly was getting video of that, so he knew more than us. And I'm looking, and I've got a backlog. I think I got like four videos of Khalil Mack to deal with. I saw zero of him during the season, so I look at these four videos, and I'm like, yes, this is an outstanding player. This is going up against two solid seasons of watching Jadeveon Clowney on a lot of Saturdays. Then going back and pulling up my tape files for this guy, and there's like 13 of them. And okay, I'll grant you that the Texans might know more. I mean, that the Rams might know more, certainly. They have a chance to talk to these guys, talk to these coaches. They have scouts at these games. Fair enough. But for the rest of us, how can we really? It is comparing apples to oranges. And when I look at it, I think we are all overthinking at this point. You know, Jadeveon Clowney, phenomenal player. Most of the things about his work ethic came to us from Steve Spurrier, who didn't have the work ethic to succeed in the NFL. So I'm not sure where, I talk about a guy who will denigrate anyone if it'll move him, 6 inches more down the road. It's Steve Spurrier, who doesn't pay attention to his defense anyway. So I'm not sure where that's coming from. And I think he's an outstanding player. But you're right. When we get to this point in the draft, like this kid from Buffalo is fantastic, and Bortles from Central Florida is fantastic. Those of us who watched it, look at it. We say these are good players, but we have all the buts. When you're hearing it and you're not hearing any of these buts, then you have to be a little worried about who's giving you the information.
Yeah, and it is, and it does with the Clowney thing. I feel like basically, I mean, by the night of it, it would certainly seem that if that rule didn't exist, that he had to stay 2 years in college, he would have obviously been
Yes.
gone after that first year. And so this whole year, it's this weird kind of thing because, it's an impossible situation these players get put in a lot of ways. Because of Clowney, I mean, basically, it seems kind of clear that Clowney was like, all right, I'm going to play the hard this year so I don't hurt myself too much, but I'm not going to hurt myself.
Right.
And like got himself in that position. So on one hand, team should be happy. They should be like, awesome, he's healthy. We can pick him now. But instead, they've totally turned the other way and be like, he wasn't willing to hurt himself for no money and have him not be in this position. So therefore, we're holding that against him.
Yep, and look at the locker room he was in 2012, if I got my years right, when Marcus Lattimore, who would have been a top 15 running back, gets completely debilitatingly injured for zero money, $0, comes out being a fourth round pick. He's in the middle of this, Lattimore sacrifices himself for the greater good of South Carolina and Spurrier.
Yeah, look what
So
that
he's
got
looking
him.
at the same situation. Then he comes into the 2013 season, and I watched a lot of these games, and I don't know what games other people were watching. I know what NFL scouts were watching, but the sort of gadfly people, well, it's another zero sack game. Every play was a rollout away from Clowney or a screen that was thrown over Clowney's head as he was coming in. And I watched some of these games, and he's tearing up double teams. I watched him play against Bortles, and a triple team blocked him on a couple of plays because the entire philosophy on offense was to prevent Clowney from dictating this game. So and so he's dealing with that, and then he's also getting banged up as the season goes on, and he does shut himself down for a game. And oh my God, like exactly what you said, he's shutting himself down. Yes, because he's making $0 and 0 cents. He's trying to prepare himself for his career. If you and I were preparing ourselves for journalism career and we shut ourselves down because we have laryngitis as college seniors, it might be a wise business decision. But instead, Steve Spurrier says, "Boy, I have questions about this." Well, the rest of us have questions about Steve Spurrier, so I guess it all fits,
For what it's worth, I'm shutting myself down for future glory right now. Like, this is what I've been doing for the last year. I'm still a future project down the line. I'm just saving myself for make sure I don't blow a hammy or something. Yeah, that Lattimore example is such a great example. Like, that's exactly right. That's exactly why you don't do that. Ugh. But I think that speaks to the larger thing about the draft that I will say I find it putting a. I find it sometimes. Like, I want to get excited about the draft, and then you'll just see this stuff of, like, just some random dude sitting in his suburban house in Chicago being like, Clowney doesn't care about the game enough.
Right.
It's hard. It is hard for me sometimes to watch the draft and not even watch the draft. The draft, everyone is happy. They get drafted and they're happy. And then there's that poor schmuck that's gonna sit and have the camera on the whole time. And there's entertainment value in it, but it does feel like so much of the discussion. It's less about so much of the discussion is less about talent and more about character stuff that people really have no idea about.
I think what we as a profession of draft picks, we have to get away from all that character nonsense. Obviously, we have arrests and things like that. We can talk about that, but when you get to that weird nitty-gritty, Johnny Manziel's tweets, and is this guy the bright light, the big city? And I think we all know. I mean, we're sitting here. We all know the name of the guy who is pretty much a pariah among other draft picks for the fact that he does this nonstop. And he comes in and makes these ridiculous, horrible statements about players' characters, and he never leaves his home. And he's a high-ranking draft pick, and he works for NFL.com of all places right now. And he's the one who sort of drives that portion of the industry, and it's horrendous. There's a big groundswell of the rest of us trying to get away from that because it's not positive, it's not useful, not charitable to these players who, until a couple of weeks from now, are making $0 and 0 cents for our entertainment. And there's usually no business in it unless we happen to know that they are, dedicating their lives to missionary work or they've been arrested six times. Everything in between, we're just guessing. And that includes people who go and do their legwork and go to the colleges and all. So that's one of the things that we should be striving to get away from. And I think some of us are, and there's one individual who isn't, whose name will remain Nolan Norwalkie.
That guy sucks. Let me just go on record. Okay, that guy sucks.
He's a pariah of the industry, and I can say this to you, and I can say this to America, because I never see this man. How is this man a draft expert? I go down to Mobile, I go to Indianapolis, and I see Russ, and I see Rob Rang, and Mike Miller, and Mayock, and Kuiper, and all these guys. How can there be an invisible man that no one ever sees who actually knows whether a guy's smile is fake or not when he's not even in the room? He's a joke. He's a blight upon our, upon my profession, and I would like him to quietly retire and go someplace.
Yeah,
did I make that clear enough?
Yeah, that was awesome. And see, that's the problem is, there's a problem is we living, and I listen, I'm as much a part of this as anyone, and you try to fight as much as you can, but like, you know, the idea is, the fact is, you can tell me everything I need to know about Blake Bortles' arm angle, and the thing that's gonna make my my dog from Up go squirrel is when someone says that is someone does something ridiculous like that, and it's true, and that's, it's human nature, and it sucks. So, but he sucks, and so we'll move on. But yes. In case he's listening, of course he's not listening. This is about football. He wouldn't be listening to this. So now the big thing in the paper today, in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today, is Jeff Fisher is full bore, officially says Sam Bradford is my man. So the Rams will not be drafting a quarterback. Are they going to trade from that spot, or are they going to grab somebody?
I think that they're going to be hearing a lot of phone calls for the number two, and it's going to be a situation where I think – they're going to look at Mack or Clowney and whoever's left. Fisher's eyes are going to light up. His eyes are going to light up if Clowney's sitting there. He's going to be, and he's going to have like this Fisher high that he gets from like another defensive lineman, as if they need to sack 6 million quarterbacks per year and then lose the game 3-0. And he's going to have to get talked off the ledge if Clowney's still there. That said, if Mack's still there, that's a fit they might like too. But they're going to get the phone calls at that point from teams looking at number two, and they're going to field them. And I think that they might get some offers that they like, at which case they will move out of that number two position. If teams are trying to lowball them, yeah, look at Jeff Fisher and look at his history. He would be very happy with either of those defensive players or Greg Robinson. And that's one of the reasons why I'm seeing a lot of the last mocks, and like when I'm listening to, we're seeing the quarterbacks start to go at, you know, 7, 8, 9, 12 down that range, as opposed to seeing them go 2, 3, 4, 5. The reason for that is, there are reasons to be a little worried about Mansell's overall, you know, his readiness and things like that. And there's all these second-round quarterbacks that are sitting there that teams are starting to evaluate and say, hey, we can wait a year and get this guy in. By the way, I'm not 100% convinced that in the second round or third, the Rams don't go and try and find a quarterback anyway.
Yeah, and that leads us to Mansell. And, you know, it's, again, this is another time where idiots like me are like, did you see him play in college? He's so fun! like to me, like, I feel like so much of, I don't know if it's going to work or not, and I don't know, but like, to me, Cleveland and Manziel just like seem to make sense in a lot of ways, in just cultural ways, in that like they're kind of a mess, he's kind of a mess, but it will be so entertaining to watch what happens, and who knows, maybe he's the guy that saves him in a lot of ways. Is there a team, you hear so much about Manziel, is there a team that there's a sense, okay, they like him. They won't just be tempted to take him if they fall to them. People that specifically like him, are there teams out there that would do what they could to get him?
The Buccaneers do, which is strange. I thought Jeff Tedford would like some guy that he can just simply mold. And if Tedford likes him, I have a funny feeling Norv Turner likes him, even though that doesn't make any sense to me. And that's at the Vikings now, because he usually likes the pocket passer. So I think some of these quarterback guru guys are looking at this intense amount of arm talent. And they're saying, boy, this is I hate saying arm talent. I'm sorry I said that. This mixture of strength, accuracy, and ability to make this deep throw on the run, which opens up all of their playbook. And some of these older head coordinators are like, you know, we'll throw an option play in, you know, twice a game for him or whatever. And they're looking at that. I have not heard anything from the Titans, which is suspicious, because this is a team that needs a quarterback. And this is a team, when I look at the teams at the top that you need a quarterback, you know, Cleveland does, but one thing Cleveland has is they've got other skill position talent. The Jaguars don't, the Titans don't, and the Raiders don't. And all these teams could be like, boy, if you get a Manziel and you give him the Randall Cunningham treatment, which means go make two unbelievable plays, get us 14 points, and then maybe our defense can get us to a 14-10 win. And in the meantime, we'll backfill all this stuff you have to really learn about staying in the pocket and not running because you feel like running, which is one of the things he does. those teams should be looking at that as a viable model to get through, to get their rebuilding process moving. What's odd is that these teams are not looking at it that way, and it's important to point out that these teams always seem to be at the front of the draft class, you know, picking in the top 10. So maybe it's not Manziel, maybe it's them. But what I find interesting, I think, is guys I think of as quarterback gurus who are like, control freaks. I think that they would hate him, and yet they seem to like him from what I've been hearing.
Is there, of all those quarterbacks, is there the one, you know, you see Bridgewater seems to be the one that's making everybody crazy right now. How many of these guys are going to go in the first round? If you had to guess, I think I saw this on a piece earlier, but tell me in case I got it wrong.
I think we got Manziel and Bortles going relatively high. Bridgewater is not going to last past the Browns the second time they pick. He's a Kyle Shanahan quarterback because they like that rollout short passing type game a lot. And I think a team at the end is going to reach. It might not be one of the teams drafting now, but someone's going to pull up into the first round and try to make a trade with some team that doesn't have a lot of needs. And they're going to reach, and they might reach for Tom Savage, who's got a gun, or they might reach for somebody like a Zach Mettenberger, who's not on a lot of lists right now, who has a cannon arm and is a guy who's coming off an ACL injury. You got to wait till 2015. But if any team goes up at that point, they're going to go for these fireball, fastball, big 6'4" guy type pitchers, because that's the rare skill that you have. If you wait till the second round, there's 5, 6, 7 guys you can say, hey, yeah, I started for a couple of years. I've got a pretty good arm. I can move okay. When there's a bunch of them, you don't have to move up to get them.
Yeah, I wonder about that. Speaking, you know, for my personal team, I feel like the Arizona Cardinals are they're a team that can wait to the second round and be like, I don't know, we can have a year and see how Mettenberger does in a year or so, or maybe even a guy like what's the EIU quarterback, the Eastern Illinois quarterback.
Which quarterback?
The Eastern Illinois.
Eastern Illinois Bortles.
Yeah.
No, Eastern Illinois is.
What is his name?
It's Garoppolo.
Yeah.
At Central Florida there.
Yeah. Part of the EIU, Eastern Illinois taking over the NFL, which I always kind of love. And because there's like the Shanahan. Heimerdinger was another one. Anyway. But like, it feels like there's teams like that. It's weird because in a lot of ways, you know, there's all this talk in recent years, I think with very good reason, as to how, you know, running backs, like it looks like there'll be no running backs in the first round this year. It's clearly a position that people don't value as much in the draft. It's almost strange. I'm curious, are some of these quarterbacks considering falling down later in the first round and maybe the second because people are devaluing, not so much devaluing the position, but feeling you can get the position at a lower rate? Or is that just because there's not elite talent this year?
It's not elite talent, but it's sort of that in-between talent. It's a weird combination where you get so many guys coming out who've accomplished some things, have a couple of things that they can really hang their hat on, but aren't at that next level. And teams are saying, well, I think they're learning their lesson about overdrafting those quarterbacks and saying, well, we have a need, we get this guy. I think in 2011, when Andy Dalton came out in the second round, and while Dalton's not, you know, this top flight character, he got the team to the playoffs several times. He's very good. Kaepernick comes out in the second round. Meanwhile, teams in the first round who reached, like, oh, my God, Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder, Jake Locker, teams are seeing that if you keep your powder dry, you can get these guys. Now that your Cardinals are in a unique situation in that, you know, they're late in the first round. They obviously need a quarterback of the future, and they've got a lot of their needs met because they had a pretty good free agent class. They had some guys injured last year, like Jonathan Cooper, who are coming back. So they're a team that could look at that. And I can see Bruce Arians saying just what you're saying right now. Boy, Tom Savage looks a lot like Ben Roethlisberger to me. Or Zach Mettenberger looks a lot like Ben Roethlisberger to me. Let me try and get these guys. And that wouldn't be a bad pick at the end. It's those teams at the front that have to look at this and are getting maybe a little bit more logical now about saying, well, forget need, when Sammy Watkins at wide receiver and Jake Matthews at tackle are on the board, and these guys can step right in, start, and be a starter for 12, 13, 14 years. They're starting to be a little bit more mindful of that.
So, all right, I'm sorry I have to do this. I know you're probably tired of talking about it, but I wrote a comment this yesterday. I feel like still the story of Saturday is going to be Michael Sam. Mm-hmm. I wrote that it was. It seems, you know, the way that we talk about the draft, we start to – that you just start talking about so much that it's so weird to see the idea that Sam, you know, it was the notion that he would have not been drafted, I think, was always considered kind of silly. But now, you know, you see Nate Silver saying it's 50-50. Is he going to get drafted? Do you think what would you put the odds of him being drafted on Saturday?
I think he's got about 80% chance of getting drafted. I think in the later rounds he becomes a very high value player. I think you got about, I would say, 2/3 to 3/4 of the teams have both a relatively open mind in management and a locker room culture that they feel they are comfortable with, that they can turn around and say, well, we can bring an openly gay player in. You know, the Dolphins might be a little worried, for example, about doing something like that. But most of the teams realize they can do that. And that's where the value comes into play, that point in the draft. I think a 5th, 6th, 7th round, and Russ Landy, Dan Pompey, we all have it in about the same range. Some of the other guys off of Sports on Earth I talked to kind of have it in the same range.
So if he doesn't get drafted, there's going to be a kerfuffle. There's going to be one. Do you think it will be warranted?
Well, the kerfuffle will be on our own site.
I'll be doing it.
Here's what happens. I just want to inform. Here's what happens if he does not get drafted. The draft ends, his phone rings about 8, 9, 10 times. 8 or 9 or 10 teams will call him, looking for him to come as an undrafted rookie free agent. He will possibly be offered more money than a 7th-round pick will get offered as a signing bonus, because he now has options that he can go to. And he can get the opportunity at that point to possibly listen to these coaches, GMs, and scouts a little bit and satisfy any discomforts he might have that somebody might be bringing him in for some nefarious reason, or bringing him into a horrible situation. So while I think that would be a bad scene if he doesn't get drafted, it is not a cataclysm. We will obviously see the talk of cataclysm all over the place, but this is the reality of this. This was not Jadeveon Clowney coming out. This was Michael Sam, obviously a very accomplished college football player, but I can point to you to lots of guys who had the same level of accomplishments who wind up in the same boat as him. So, the part of me that just simply wants things to move smoothly, I look at Manti Te'o last year, and Manti Te'o goes in the 2nd round, the middle round, to a small market team and disappears from our consciousness. Yeah. It would be great. So, Michael Sam, he comes in, he gets picked by the Ravens, he gets picked by, the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's in the 5th round, and everybody makes a big deal about it and everything, and he gets to be a football player. That's what he wants. I think that's what we want, to go and be a football player and quietly ply his trade and to make noise the first time he has a 3-sack game. And I think there's a very good chance it's going to come out that way, but I think we're all braced for the possibility that it won't.
Well, to be fair, Te'o may not have disappeared. It's possible he never existed at all.
Oh,
there we go. Sorry, I had to do that.
I watched Chargers film enough that you may be right.
I'm sorry. That was really cheap, and I apologize. Okay, so I'm curious. This is the last question, because I know you got a million things to go today. Is of all the things in both day one and the whole weekend, you personally, of having covered this and dug into it so much, what is the thing that you're most excited to see? What's the question you're most curious to see answered of all the teams making moves, or all the people being drafted? What's the thing that's going to make you go, oh, that is how that turned out. That's amazing. Which is that thing?
Well, I was going to say Ty Burrell making picks for the Rams. I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too.
Yeah, I think Les Snead, their GM, was hoping for Sofia Vergara. But, you get what you get. You don't get upset. But the two teams with the two number one picks, I mean, these are franchises, the Browns and Rams, that have been just completely, for Rams it's been like 6 or 7 years. For the Browns it's been as long as they've been back. They have not been able to take any opportunity like this and do anything but make matters worse. And these are golden opportunities they have now. Two first-round picks, a draft that is lousy with first-round talent, and both teams have assets right now. So they're not the Jaguars or the Raiders saying, well, just spit down the well and grab a guy and bring him in and he'll become one of us, gabba gabba hey, and he will fail. So I look at them and say, is this the harbinger of the next generation? And then you hear all this stuff, and the teams are saying, well, this was a smokescreen, and we're committed to Bradford, and Vince Young is coming to the Browns, and we don't like this guy. And I kind of wished over the last 2 weeks both teams had completely kept their mouths shut. So it didn't sound like that they were, talking to themselves or trying to play the media. But I want to see these. And what inevitably what will happen in the first round is I think both teams will come away with two guys each that, we can all believe in, and this is the course of the next generation and the turning point for the franchises. And I think I just want to see more. I want to be not just, thrilled, oh, good, look, two guys. I want to be completely blown away by what they do, because I would like to see these teams pivot. I like to see new things to talk about. I do a lot of jokes. I get bored with doing Browns jokes after a while. I really do. I want to turn the corner and say, look, they've turned around, I'll make fun of the next team and go down the line of new personalities. So that's really – and what's interesting is, like you said, I've said there's been smoke screens and talk and everything. I have no idea going in. And that's what makes it most interesting.
All right, man. Well, listen, I love, not only do I love your work, I'm proud of you for making it this far without hallucinating at all. I don't know, maybe this whole draft, you know, okay, Mike, I hate to be the one to tell you, the draft was actually a week and a half ago. This is still like an after effect dream that you're having. So I feel like I need to like wake you up, because I know that I can't imagine how much your brain has been frazzled by everything going on. You're doing great work, and it's an honor to get to read it, and good luck hanging in, man.
I'll give you one story before I go. I used to be on Saturday all day, and I used to cover the entire first round, which is like 11 and a half hours. At night, that night I would have nightmares of hearing da 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 da, the little ESPN noise. Yeah. I'm in a new draft. Like, I would wake myself up, like I had to make a scouting report or something. So this is a little bit better, but you're right, I may be hallucinating.
That story that you told of waking up to that sound, that's actually how Deadspin was founded. Was actually that exact idea. So it kind of works out. Mike, you're killing it. Good work, man. Hang in there. Get some rest on Sunday. You can rest on Sunday. Or Sunday gonna be the grade everybody's draft. You can sleep on Monday.
Sunday's Mother's Day, man.
Oh, right.
So I gotta take care of my business on Sunday. I do the grades like on Wednesday. I'll get the grades then. You know, I used to be a teacher. I can grade fast.
That's good. I'm sure. All right. Good motor, man. Thanks. Now we'll chat soon. Keep up the great work.
Okay. Take care, man.
All right. Thank you to Mike Tanier, who is the best. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Tanier. MiketaNier. I apologize for the landscaping folk. Making noise outside my window. It's a beautiful Thursday, May Thursday morning in Athens, Georgia, and my hedges are being clipped, and that is not a euphemism. Anyway, this has been the Willis Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Thank you for a fun week of shows. We'll be back on Monday. Maybe some sort of draft wrap-up. Maybe everyone just can take a nap and forget the draft happened. Have a happy Mother's Day. Be nice to your mom. Be a nice mom. Be nice to your wife. Be a nice wife. Whoever you are listening, you have some connection to a mother, so be friendly to that person. Anyway, take care, and I will talk to you and somebody on Monday.